Hey everyone, welcome to Founders 365 with me, Stephen Haggerty. Today I'm joined by the founder of possibly the best peanut butter you will ever have tasted. It is Manny Life and this is Stuart McDonald. How are you today, Stuart?
Hey, mate, very well and thanks for the introduction. Appreciate it.
No worries. Dude, I'm so thrilled you're on here. Like I said just before, I was kind of binging on some of your funding videos and I absolutely love your energy. I think like you're just a happy guy, which in the current world is always refreshing when you've just got a happy guy on the podcast. But let's jump into this. And for those that haven't experienced the mouth-watering effect of your product, I guess you better tell people what Manny Life is.
Okay, so So in a nutshell, that...
No pun intended.
That generally wasn't intended. So I pause. In a nutshell, Manny Life creates what we and I think many other people believe is the world's tastiest peanut butter through sourcing the finest peanuts on the planet from a single farm in Argentina, roasting them to a perfection which we've kind of crafted over the last 3-4 years, and blending them in small batches to obtain a creaminess that you kind of don't really understand until you try it. But I think probably would be, like, you've got like the spiel. So I'll give you like the rundown of how it got going. I think that kind of paints a bit more of a picture. Manny Life basically started when I was offered a job as an accountant at a company called PwC. I knew I didn't really want to do it. So I decided to put it off to move to Argentina, where the idea was I'd go there, live the dream, and build up enough guilt to become an accountant for 3 years, which kind of gives you a kind of clue into my character. And went there, fell into working with this peanut butter social enterprise. We'd go around soup kitchens, kind of delivering the stuff to kids and families, teach them how to use it. And in the process, started getting super interested in a product that I had previously had no interest in at all. Got to the stage where I was kind of experimenting with recipes in my buddy's kitchen, selling to like people on Facebook, until I eventually tracked down the farm in Argentina that we still work with today. Drove to see them, did crash the car actually on the way, but that's a separate story. And in short, like fell in love with them. The product was amazing, but as people, it was just like,
yeah,
we bonded. And it was around that time that I looked at the market back home. I saw it was booming, but I saw that no one was speaking about peanut butter the same way we speak about coffee, chocolate, mm-hmm. wine. Like, there was no provenance, there was no craft. So in April, May 2015, I came home, put off the job again with the idea of starting this provenance-led peanut butter brand. And it was like a complete fucking disaster. The day the peanuts arrived, the first ton of peanuts arrived in the UK, our production partner pulled out. So I had a ton of peanuts in my bedroom in 25 kilo bags.
Literally a ton.
Yeah, literal ton. And like panicked slightly, but eventually rented out my old rugby club kitchen, got together about 45 mates, bought two little blenders. And that summer we made 4,000 jars of peanut butter, one jar at a time. And that was like, in hindsight, the best thing that could have ever happened, because we went from being like a provenance-led co-packed brand to understanding and experimenting with a product in a way that I don't think anyone to that point, and I'm not even sure now, has done. Mm-hmm. And kind of since then, it's just been a roller coaster. I did become an accountant for a year and then quit. And it's just been, it's been a complete like mishmash. And it's only in the last year and a half, 2 years, that like things have suddenly started to get real. And it's all team and like a build up.
All the good stuff. Exactly. What I'm curious to know is that back in that rugby kitchen with 45 people of your mates, with two blenders, at that point, did you know within you deep down that you thought, okay, this is going to be something? You maybe not know what it was, but did you think, this is going to lead into something?
It's a good question, because it was kind of like, it's funny because it wasn't like I was completely free and it was just exploratory sure. And I was having loads of fun. Like, I was immensely stressed and I'd be getting up at 3 in the morning. I remember my driving my older brother to work and breaking down in tears. And I can't, it was like, because I know I was stressed about going back
you're
to the
just
kitchen.
On the edge.
Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't like it was like exploratory. It was like, I was piling like a shed load of pressure on myself. But at the same time, there was that thing of like, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
I think part of me was like, this is going to be something, but it wasn't like I had a picture of like, I don't know, being the next Whole Earth or transforming the market. Like,
yeah, at that point, you never imagined that people would tweet you with Manny Life jars in their hand, being like, I just got this delivered.
And it was because, I think it was partly because every time I would go out and sell, I'd be in the back of my mind, I'd be like, oh my God, I've got to get back to the kitchen. And it was when, like, I kind of let go of the need to go back to the kitchen. We, like, employed a team to run it. That was when it started to feel a bit more fun. And then we partnered up with a production site and I got our line in there. That was when it's like, and weirdly, once that happened, like, that was probably the hardest period. There was a period of, like, 6 or 7 months where, like, fundraise took too long, supply chain fell apart, and, like, realized, well, like, one of the team quit and realized there were, we didn't have the right team, and that was like mental stress. But yeah, it's funny. I feel like with these chats, there's a lot of like strategy and plans kind of imposed for the benefit of hindsight. And at the time, I was just like, don't want to be an accountant. There's something in this. It's relatively straightforward. Like you're selling a product for a margin, and I love everyone I'm working with.
And that's the thing, right? It's creating the environment that you love it and you have that control over. Obviously, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you use the same farmer in Argentina that you did when you were living there. How important is that aspect to you? How important is the... Because that creates such an amazing story, but also behind the story, it actually
creates... supply chain risk.
fairly big supply chain risk.
Yeah.
But it also, it's such a... It's like a really poetic statement for a business to do that, I think.
Yeah. It's immensely important to me personally. And it's very important from a branding perspective. And I think that there's that kind of like that theme of working with people and building something with people that like I genuinely love is something. I told you that my wife has turned me into a complete pussy. I'm kind of getting emotional talking about this. But
it's okay to cry, man.
Yeah. Thanks, man. God.
Virtual.
But it's like, so we've got that with the farm. We've got that with our roastery. We've got that with our production sites. And we've got that with my team. And I think if shit hit the fan and Argentina like politically collapsed and closed its borders, like we have a plan to maintain the business and the product would be slightly different, but we'd manage.
Yeah.
But like that plan also involves a farm in a different country that I'm building a relationship with. So
the premise is still the same.
Yeah, exactly. Like the key thing for me and like what really drives it, I think is like, it sounds so naff when you say it out loud, but it's like the family and like, so for instance, the roastery we work with, their head of technical, when we got an article about being like, I feel like a proud auntie, like a tears come to my eye. And to some extent, like I'm sure that's the case with many businesses, but I know for a fact that with many businesses it's not. And I guess, it's a lot of love. There's a lot of love in Manny Life.
It's a lot of love. And I think that's why the brand in itself has so much attraction. And even from the face of it, you can see that story play out. But then when you start looking into it and, you know, like I said before, when I was watching the videos that you were putting on Cedars, and the amount of passion that you have for the product and the amount of passion you have to... what I really love is that it's just a really simple concept. You're just delivering an amazing product without being messed with, right? It's just having this amazing product in people's hands.
Yeah.
Over the last, you know, 4 years, you've already kind of mentioned some challenges and turbulations. Mm. But for you, how have you managed to carry on? How have you managed to deal with it when things do, let's face it, not quite go to plan? Like you said, production lines fail and some other aspects.
Yeah. So there's partly like the inner demon of like, if you give up on this, you'll never forgive yourself and I'll never forgive you, which sounds like I'm kind of a bit split personality, but there's that. Which has meant that although there have been like immense struggles, and I think I was telling you before this, there was a period in Manav's history where I would genuinely wake up in the middle of the night screaming, which is just an absurd thing to consider when it's peanut butter.
When you listen to this back, you're going to think, maybe I should go see a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. mate, my wife is basically my doctor.
There we go.
But even throughout all that, there was only ever one time where like the idea of quitting came into my head, and it was like an incident. And when it happened, I was like terrified. And I think during that period, what kept me going was one, not my now wife, Saz, who was then my girlfriend, and family. So family, but I stopped exposing my family to like the inner depths of the stress, because like, I know they shouldn't have to worry about it. Whereas Saz kind of shouldered most of it. But yeah, and that's why I think it's so important. It's why like when some people were kicking off about Bezos's wife walking away with like half his fortune, which sounds like billions, I was like, if Manav ever got to that stage, I don't think I'd really want it to be like a multi billion.
Sure.
I think, yeah, but like Saz would 100% deserve half of my bit, because it's like there's all the stuff behind the scenes, like the support network that people don't see, but is
the people see the polished product, don't they? They see the fact that you've gone through incredible funding rounds, you've gone through incredible growth, you're on supermarket shelves, and but people don't see, like you said, that those 3M moments where you've probably got self-doubt, like, things are going wrong, team people, like you said, people, vulnerability side. And I guess this is why, this is one of the reasons I started the podcast, because actually vulnerability and bit within business owners is something that probably doesn't get spoken about enough. But every single person I've spoken to, and you know, that's over 200 people, and every single one of them has gone through that same journey of vulnerability. For you know, you mentioned family, and I think when you say family, I'm assuming the team dynamic has such a family feel to it.
There is that, but there's also like I've got really good relationship with my like my parents are like they're like kind of my idols.
Amazing.
Even though they're not, well, his mum ran a dental practice, so she's kind of like an entrepreneur, but like in a different way.
But so, I mean, you have to have those role models in life for sure. What I'm curious about is, you know, as you started in such a raw fashion, you know, really feet on the ground sort of momentum, when you started to build that team, how was that transition for you? Like you said, one of those first moments that you could actually really help grow the business was kind of when you started to build the team. So how was that in those early days and finding those right people?
So in the early days, we had, maybe cut out that burp, Stephen.
No edit, I told you, man.
No, leave it in, it's raw, it's fine. In the early days, Manny Life was fueled by this like legion of volunteers. And in that instance, it was kind of fair, it was more straightforward, because it was like, I was doing everything to make sure they were happy, which meant that I was doing a lot of what ideally I'd maybe want the team to do, but like they were offering themselves and like their love and passion for nothing. So it was like the dynamic was, I'll give you everything I can possibly give, which doesn't involve money, but is kind of more if you help us get this thing off the ground. When we started... when we started paying people, and that was probably before we were actually able to, like we were loss making, like many of these guys are for the first like, few years, it actually became more complex. And a few things happened. So of the team now, there's only one remaining first man of team. It's a guy called Dan Pope, who, yeah, I met him at the pub. He's my little brother's mate. And yeah, like follow him on LinkedIn. He's an absolute like firecracker. But I think it came from the fact that because of that dynamic of like giving everything I can give to make sure you guys help out, I became so like overwhelmed that I was like suddenly a crack. I was like, fuck, we really need to get someone on board. And the classic thing, like hired too fast, made a few wrong decisions. And the first Man United team wasn't right. And there was still kind of that dynamic of what we were paying them, but I kind of felt like the habit of I still need to do everything I can was still there. So it was kind of like, perhaps I wasn't enabling them to do their job properly because I was diving in, but they weren't right, basically. And then the second iteration was when, which is kind of the iteration we're on now, was when hired people ultimately like better or as good as I am. And it was just like, there was just a sudden realization that like, just let go.
Yeah.
And what's been amazing in the last, so COVID, so end of March, I got COVID, and I was pretty ill. So I was completely knocked out for 8 days and was off work for 2 weeks. And to the extent that I literally wasn't calling the team. And that was the most successful 2 weeks in Man United history to that point. It's like completely
like going off. It kind of makes you think.
Yeah, which is like the best thing ever.
It's the dream.
Like it's like that's one of my proudest things, is like having brought this group of incredible people together who are thriving and building a business without any of this like autocratic like do this, do that, which I just think is an outdated method.
Definitely.
And then same thing again happened 2 weeks ago when I was on my honeymoon. No calls, blah, blah, blah. Got back. Heard like all this horrendous stuff had happened. And then it's like, but we sorted and we were fine. And I was like, thanks for not letting me know, guys. And that's kind of roundabout way of coming to the question. But
I mean, but that must make you also feel tremendously proud of the team and the fact that you can...
Yeah.
I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of trust as well that they've given you and vice versa.
For sure.
For the Manny Life dream, the Manny Life vision, what is it that keeps you going? Because, you know, you've got this passion, you've got this amazing product, it's doing incredibly well. Mm. What now motivates you today? Mm. What motivates you to develop this further and carry on pushing?
So there's kind of, I think probably... to give like the full answer, need to reflect, like sit back in the recliner. But I think there's like immediately comes to mind, there's kind of two things. There's the underlying like constant there, which is like really love working with people we love and really enjoy making people happy. And as someone who's had it, you're kind of, I think you're aware of it. Like when people try Manny Life, it's like when you read our reviews, it's like they're describing some kind of like intimate partner. It's like there's something that happens and it's like there's joy that's just like instilled in you. And then they get into the brand and that kind of elevates it. So there's that thing. And that I think will be a constant until whenever. And I think that's really important. And then the other side, which is probably the demon, is right now the goal is be the number one peanut butter brand in the UK within the next 3 years.
Love
and that's like the competitive like intense thing that but probably drove me largely in the early days, and the trick and something like that I'm like constantly working on is balancing the two, because if you're all intensity, then instead of instilling urgency, you're instilling anxiety, which isn't good for anyone. And if you're all like we just want to have fun and love, then you lack the intensity to get to ultimately create more happiness, which is getting more people. So it's like there's a balancing act.
It's like one of those old scales, isn't it, where you put in the weights and then trying to find that perfect balance. Sure. And sometimes it doesn't quite work out. One thing that you show within the business is bringing on the customers into the journey. You know, you've crowdfunded and that kind of thing. Yeah. Was that a conscious thought for you to make sure that the consumers and the people that are tasting it get the journey, get the story? Or was it more of actually, let's just create that really good product no matter how we get that investment?
So the first crowdfund we did, like, absolutely, it was because it's the community point. Because like the business had been grown by 60, 70 volunteers. I used to speak to our online customers like every once in a while. Like, we had a list of 20 or 30 that bought loads, and I'd call them maybe every 6 months. And like Manilove was basically fueled by a lot of relationships. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to enable people that maybe didn't have like thousands of pounds to kind of pledge their part to the business they already had done through like sweat and tears.
Sure.
And then after that, it was just a straightforward
enabler,
like somewhat stress-free way to raise money.
Yeah.
And
obviously proving a great success as well.
Yeah.
What were some of those hurdles that you had to go through when you make, because I think a lot of founders have this, they make, it's a very different feel of a business or very different moment when investing starts happening, when, you know, these external factors start becoming more apparent in the business.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're still going through them now. And I think, like, on the one hand, I've never done this before. So seeking advice and seeking ways to grow myself and the business is the right thing to do. On the other hand, no one knows the business as well as we do. So you kind of trust that we make the right decisions. But in terms of challenges, I mean, there's like a whole heap. So where do we start?
Should have prepped you on this one.
Yeah. So Cedars as an early investor was great because although they've got their big shareholder, they represent 600 voices, and ultimately, like, we kind of picked a couple of those voices to really come aboard with, and one of them is still on board now. But Cedars, more or less, they're like pro entrepreneur, let you get on with it. The biggest learning that we kind of had to make twice, the biggest learning from post Cedars is we went from a stage where it was all debt that I'd taken on personally, and we had no money, and it was like just like beg, borrow, and steal, to suddenly there's more money in your bank account. And at the time, it kind of felt like the business bank account was my bank account because like the business number was one. And that's changed like what now than I'd ever seen before in my life. And we started spending like just stupid money on stupid shit. We spent like $8,000 on an event kit, and we didn't sell any more or get any more customers at events than if we just had what we had before, which was like a flag at the back. Because ultimately, people liked coming to it because the product was great and the kind of environment we created. So that was a big learning. And then there's suddenly this like, okay, we've got this money, let's hire someone. And then we were hired too quickly, hired the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like the cash on the one hand gave us the space to breathe and like think, but then we spent it so quickly because we felt we had loads of cash that like a year later we were like, shit, like we're gonna need to raise money again. And that was when the stress really started, because although the business had come on heaps and bounds, like the way we'd set it up, we hadn't achieved what we'd set out to achieve in the space of time. And the fundraise took far longer than I anticipated for a whole heap of reasons. And that was the period when we closed the fundraise and then shit in the fan just as I was breathing. And that was when I was waking up screaming. But yeah, it's like raising money is an interesting one, because on the one hand, it's great because it enables you space to like get out of the small business cycle and breathe and think about the future. On the other hand, you feel it's like an artificial de-shackling, because ultimately you still need to grow a profitable business, and at last we're profitable. So it's and that's
right,
such a burden. Yes, such a burden that to be like taking off your shoulders, because you know that you can now create a business where like you can bring it down to 1% and build up.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas before, it's like losing like thousands of pounds every month, you know. And as a, like a, an accountant, like that caused, or sorry, 11 month accountant, that caused me such like angst and like, yeah, yeah, it was, it was interesting.
Right, like you said, raising money is, I feel like you can talk about raising money until the cows come home, and
yeah, but it's like, bullshit.
I think every business deals with it differently. Definitely, recently, I think there's that danger of companies just getting in that consistent raising money cycle and actually never becoming what you've become, which is obviously a profitable business, which is great. What over the last 4 years, what is one moment that you can look back on now, sat there, and it just fills you with incredible amount of joy? And I'm sure it's hard to choose one moment.
So there's lots, obviously, but the big one that I probably speak about a bit too much with the team because a lot of them weren't here when it happened, but it kind of encapsulates the kind of the culture, which I now need to start consciously trying to instill as opposed to just letting it happen. But in November 2017, I got a call when we were a team of two people. I got a call from a company called Gusto. Gusto, the recipe box company, like amazing business. And it was this Geordie woman who's no longer there, but she's a legend, saying, "Stu, supplier shafted us. We need 9,000 mini pots in 9 days. Can you help?" And I was like, okay, like trying to at that stage, I was trying to like dial in the focus because we get too much going on. I was like, okay, need to think about it. But anyway, so board meeting was the next day. Sat around, and it was like an afterthought. At the end of the board meeting, I was like, "Guys, by the way, this has happened. Kind of feel potential distraction, but what do you think?" And I remember our chairman at the time, just like the whole room went silent. He looked at me and says, "Stu," I won't say exactly what he said, but like, "This is the best opportunity we've had in history.
Yeah.
Make sure it happens." And he's subsequently said that he wasn't sure it would happen, but in 8 days, so called that after and be like, "Guys, we're going to go for it." So in 8 days, we got 30,000 mini pots sent from Belgium. We got rented a kitchen. We got 14 mates together, one of whom was my mum and one of whom was my wife.
It's like the rugby club all over.
Yeah, exactly. And in two nights, we packed 9,000 mini pots using piping bags, delivered it on time. 3 weeks later, HelloFresh called. 3 months later, Mindful Chef called. And since that moment, which was like a split decision, and ultimately it was like, let's go. And there was no hesitation. Mm-hmm. We've delivered like 2.5, I think close to 3 million branded mini pots into the recipe box trade. And it was those 8 days, which has led to that. And it's amazing.
That is incredible. But that also gives such an insight into sort of how you as a founder have to think on that day-to-day basis, because, you know, opportunities come up when we least expect them and when we kind of aren't prepared for them, and those ones that we say yes to. And I love the fact that your chairman after the fact was like, "Oh, I wasn't actually quite sure, but you know, I figured I'd give you the belief and see what happens with it." It's a decision that pays off.
And it was quite amazing feeling when he sat me down and he was like, "Stu, like, could tear up again." Like, I think I remember the words. It was like, "I'm so proud of this. I'm so proud of you." And I was like, it was everyone, but like, and it was a month later that he said that.
Incredible. So what's next for you guys? I mean, you just said that you want to be the number one peanut butter brand, and I mean, from everyone I've spoken to, I feel like you're already there. How do you make that happen, but also how do you tangibly know when you're there? How do you tangibly know when you are the number one?
So glad you asked. We've got two measures. So one is highest retail sales, and that's like straightforward. I get, and there's stuff that gets missed there, like online gets missed there, but highest sales UK, and we've defined our sector strictly. Initially, it's natural peanut butter, so it's unstabilized, but it's like peanut butter is our thing. So more or less, all our competitors are peanut butter is like part of their repertoire. So won't get names, but. Spread across almond butter, like chocolate spread, sometimes drinks.
They've got many lines.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas we're like super dialed in. And I just think peanut butter can be elevated to a level that none of our competitors are currently doing. So like very careful to find the set. And then the next, which is a bit unromantic, but it's called net promoter score. So it's like how many people who try a product will recommend it. And I guess always trying to simplify, even though my brain always complicates. Net promoter score is about creating like an unrivaled experience, which we've got a long way to go because like when the product's great, but lots of like things about it aren't where they should be.
Sure.
And that's product and kind of like community feel, which I feel maybe slightly better at. And then the sales is just like how many people can we get to try the product? Because more often than not, once you've tried it, if you're of a certain demographic will appreciate with premium, like there's no looking back.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of make the experience perfect, build and continue to garner the community, which like you probably tell I'm genuinely immensely grateful for.
Yeah.
And then get the product to as many consumers as possible for the first time. And ultimately it's their decision after that. But at the moment, at least, I think there isn't a peanut butter, definitely in the UK, I haven't tried every peanut butter in the world that rivals it. When we're on our day, and I think there's work that needs to be done around like, making sure that Mountain Life is always 100% Mountain Life, which is tricky when you've got a natural product, right?
But exactly. What I would love to do is in like 2-3 years time, when you've hit that target of yours, is speak to you again and just find out how it feels.
Come on.
I just want to get more tears out of you, Stu. That's the thing. I can imagine the moment in the office when you're looking at the numbers and you've achieved that. Because that is such an amazing achievement and something that can be something that can be achieved. And I think that's the difference for a lot of people's goals. It's they have a goal that perhaps isn't as tangible as they may think, but with yours it is extremely tangible. Which is so exciting.
And and it's interesting you bring that up because like I can admit, and it's why that other driver is so important, because once we get there, we'll celebrate obviously, but it'll be on to the next goal. And it's like, there'll be that set. So this Johnny Wilkinson podcast, he describes it. He's like a really complicated guy. And he describes the moment when the drop goal went over in 2003, he was ecstatic for 4 seconds. And then the XC went into decline. And it's why the like underlying work with people you love, make people happy driver is so important, because that's what's going to keep us going once we reach that goal, whilst you figure out what the next one is.
Exactly. Hopefully before you reach that goal, you'll figure out what the next one is anyway. It's a nice fluid movement. But Stu, listen, I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I feel like we could probably chat for a hell of a long more time. But one of the final things, I guess, is how can people obviously find Manny Life, experience the deliciousness of this peanut butter touching their tongue like never before?
Okay, so I guess we've got a number of independent customers that help build the business, but we don't have time to list them all, so apologies. But I haven't forgotten about the kind of first 10 customers that I sold into that are still supporting my life. But like big name stockists, I guess we've got Waitrose, Ocado, Sainsbury's, Amazon, Whole Foods, we're basically not in Tesco, Asda, or Morrison's or Lidl or Aldi. So everywhere else should be able to find it. And then I've created your many thousands, hundred thousand followers, a discount code for our website, which is www.manny-life.com. And the code is somewhat unromantically 365TESTER. So if you haven't tried Manny Life, obviously I'm going to say this, but I highly recommend you go and try it and see what happens.
I highly recommend it as well. And Stu, thank you for that code. I mean, I know, like I said, my girlfriend will be jumping on that before I probably even go downstairs. I mean, I love your story. I love your product. I just want to say congratulations on your success. I think you're a fantastic founder. You're someone that is truly inspiring. And like I said, I just want to thank you for your time And I'm sure everyone else who has ever experienced Manny life is so thankful that you're not working at PwC anymore.
PwC is great, though.
Yeah, like, yeah. So we don't get sued. Yeah. PwC is a fantastic company.
Yeah, and did learn a lot. But yeah, success is fluid. But Stephen, same to you. Inspirational podcast and what you're doing to like give people a platform and educate and inspire others is genuinely pretty amazing as well. And the fact you're doing a podcast every day is mental.
Mental.
Yeah, I don't think there's many people that do that.
No,
like the people in Hamburg.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on Founders 365. And like I said, I really appreciate that.
Cheers, mate. Have a good one. See you later.
Thanks, everyone else, for listening and watching. This has been Founders 365.